From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. You got Stuart here introducing the show, so that usually means that there is no Hunter, and you would be right. He is not available this week. But with me, as always, faithful gun bearer, John Grace. How are you, friend?
Hola.
Hola.
Oh, very good.
I was going to do the show like Marcel in this documentary, but I thought, no, it might be a bit insensitive. Yeah, so, poor bastard.
It was the 80s when I was watching that. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, I don't think that was so much an accident. It was probably just a shitload of glue.
But, right.
We'll get to him shortly. Anyway, so we are doing a documentary that I think, I know I've brought up before in the past. You may have. And the do you know how long you've been here, John, now? How many years you've been on the show? Oh,
no, I haven't really counted.
Yeah, up to nearly 8.
Really? Wow, 8 years.
So jeez. What, 13, 14, 17,
well, I haven't 18, podcasted 90. A long time. I kind of realize that.
Next year will be 8 years. Unreal.
Yeah.
But anyway.
God, it was like, what, 2 years before that on that other show. And then, almost 10 years.
Yeah,
it'd be from the opening of X-Men First Class. That's when I did my first podcast.
That was what? Oh, no, it was 2011, wasn't it?
I think it was 2011. I can't remember.
I think so.
X-Men First Class, though. It was,
that was actually that was a good film. I liked that one.
Yeah, it was. I think that's why we did it. Yeah, 2011. So I've been doing it, a good 9 years or so. I forget how long the first show ran.
And this damn show started back in September 2010 with me and Hunter. It's like, shit.
Yeah.
Man, a long-ass time ago. And, you know, because the average lifespan of a podcast is not 9 or 10 years. So we're doing all right. We keep chugging.
Yeah.
I attest us to, like, the Motorhead of podcasts. We just keep churning them out, and they're all pretty much the same. But, you know, people dig them still.
Well, my theory is people get bored with it because they restrict themselves to one format or one topic, or, you know,
yeah.
If you're focused on kind of one thing, you're going to burn out and you're going to get tired of it.
Yeah, it's true. So, all the haters out there, keep hating because we're going to be here for a long time yet. So anyway, the documentary that I was talking about was Another State of Mind, which, like I said, I brought up, and I think you have brought it up before in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think the boy has seen it yet, though. So
probably not.
No, might be a bit out of his time span, being about a dozen years younger than you and I. So
yeah.
When did you first see this?
I saw it in 2001. I think I just found the videotape at the library, and I think I'd heard about it, but it wasn't always that easy to see. Apparently, it was shown on Night Flight a few times in the 80s, but I did not catch it on there. And had I, you know, back then when I was like 12 or whatever, I probably wouldn't have sat through it because of the cheap videotape look and everything.
It is a cheap look.
You know, even when you're a kid, you're snobby about that stuff. You want a documentary on film, you know, especially back then.
Yeah, but the thing is, well, they wanted that cheap-looking aesthetic because, you know,
Don't
want to be shown as being in bed with the capitalist man.
Right. It looks like a cable access program.
It really does. But so anyway, I saw this around about the same time as you, I think. I think maybe about 99, I think. A guy I once knew who modeled himself on Mike Ness from this, I'm not kidding, the same look, the same everything. He adored Mike Ness and Social Distortion, who honestly I find the lesser of the bands in this show.
Yeah.
I just never did much
for
me.
They do have the most commercial potential. That's the thing.
Oh, for sure.
He's songwriting. You know, he's doing all the stuff that the record companies actually like.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not like Darby Crash from, what was he from?
No, The Germs.
The Germs. That's right. You know, marketable in looks, definitely, but not really. Mike Ness has got more talent than what Darby Crash had.
Right. The Germs didn't sound like a band you could play on the radio in Iowa, you know. It's like Social Distortion became that kind of Springsteen post-punk band in the 90s.
Yeah, they had a couple of big hits in the late 80s or early 90s, or one big hit at least. I remember seeing them, you know, their name sort of, you know, temporarily.
Well, their first album on CBS Records actually had some... I think the format was called AOR, like album-oriented rock, and I think some tracks from that were played on those stations and did really well. And I still hear them on our rock stations, because Social Distortion, for some reason, is very popular in Denver, Colorado. Like, really? They will sell out three nights at the Fillmore. They're just huge here. It's weird. It's not something I can really figure out. I think the Hispanics really dig them. And Mike Ness tied into that car culture thing. Like hot rods and stuff. I mean, later on, not the Mike Ness you see in this documentary, but much later on, he became a big part of that vintage hot rod rockabilly kind of scene and kind of got a loyal fandom from that.
It's like Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top's into that custom cars and hot rods and stuff.
Yeah, and I can never completely figure out what the Hispanic culture goes for here, because they'll really, really dig Social Distortion. And they'll also love, like, Morrissey. I can never figure it out. It's
really?
Like, and I guess, yeah, there's, like, a documentary about that, too, about how big the Smiths are in with the South American markets. I haven't seen it, but it's got to be pretty interesting.
Morrissey's not so popular these days with particular people.
Well, you know, this is a funny thing. I saw him live a few weeks back, and I'd say a good fourth or a third of the crowd was Hispanic. On his backdrop, you know, they have the big video backdrop. He had like pictures of the yellow vest protesters in France. So he's not backing down.
No. Oh, okay. He's that still spins me out. Morrissey, the one person who they just flock to. It's like he just turned on them, throwing up a massive middle finger to them all.
Yeah, but it's funny because on stage he has this kind of, it's like a gay Engelbert Humperdinck act or something. You know, it's doing rock music. Like he'll cover like. Back on the Chain Gang, the Pretenders song, but it's just kind of like he kind of moves around like a lounge singer or something, so it's weird.
He's always wanted that Vegas crooner gig, I reckon, Morrissey.
He's totally got it. I mean, he could totally do it. I kept thinking, geez, because I've seen Engelbert Humperdinck live, and I said, he reminds me of Engelbert.
The old ladies throwing their yeast-infected panties on the stage for Engelbert still.
You wonder.
Oh, God.
No, it didn't totally happen, but when I went to that show, I think I was the youngest guy there, except there were a couple of great grandkids running around the Paramount Theater when I saw Engelbert.
Oh, okay.
But it was mostly women over the age of 50 or 60, you know. It was not my generation. There was nobody my age, like I think I was 40 at the time, and there was nobody my age in that entire crowd.
What was his big song, Humperdinck? He had one, didn't he?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of The Last Waltz. He did a version of that that's really popular. There's a kind of All Over the World. You know, he does a Burt Bacharach song.
Oh, okay.
He was big with that. He was one of those guys who became one of the first acts to really sign to the Vegas act thing and be permanent there and move there and everything. And he became a big reason like people would go to Vegas, was always catch an Engelbert show. And in the 70s, I think he was kind of a standard.
Like Wayne Newton as well.
Right, right. He was like a more macho Wayne Newton.
Wayne Newton looks fucked these days. Oh, my. His plastic surgery has destroyed him.
Yeah, he
just looks ridiculous. The only great Wayne Newton performance was one in Ford Fairlane.
Yeah, he was great in that. but Engelbert, you know, he looked good for his age. He doesn't look like he's trying to stay youthful looking. He's just kind of aging, you know, like he should. And he was healthy and everything.
Like Tom Jones.
Yeah, yeah. Not as in great shape as Tom Jones, but he was still in shape and, you know.
Now, there's a guy who still pulls the women, mate, Tom Jones.
He's got the attitude and the swagger.
Yeah. And apparently the other part that women like a lot. Yeah, apparently.
Supposedly he took Elvira's virginity, Cassandra Peterson.
Yeah, she was saying that.
Yeah, it's a famous story there.
Lucky Tom Jones. That's all.
And somebody told me he was on the cover of Muscle and Fitness one time.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah,
not in the slightest.
Because apparently he was a big believer in, you know, lifting weights and everything.
Yeah. But so anyway, I getting back to this documentary, I'd been thinking about doing it for a little while now, but what sort of motivated me more to get this covered was the fact that just very recently I had been re-listening to Minor Threat, who are in this very, very briefly. They're not, mm-hmm. not one of the two bands that I've focused on, to their Complete Collection release, and I really liked it a lot. And then I went back, I went and trolled down through Youth Brigade, and I came across their mm-hmm. first album, their first release, Sound and Fury,
mm-hmm.
and was actually blown away how good it was. Like, wow, this is fucking great. This is a classic. But also, I've been listening to a lot of newer stuff, newer hardcore stuff. And mm-hmm. Agnostic Front are an older band, but they're newer releases. And some of the actual Krishna core things I've been listening to just for a little while. Shelter was one. Their Mantra album mm-hmm. I really like a lot. And early Cro-Mags as well. What was that popular? Oh, The Age of Quarrel, which is a fucking classic album.
Right.
So all those sorts of stuff was sort of speeding me along to say, oh, I should really check out Another State of Mind, because we've already done the Decline of West Civilization Part 1. We've already done that. So Another State of Mind was the obvious choice. And I'd not seen it for a number of years and thought I actually owned it, but I didn't. So I had to, you showed me the YouTube link.
Yeah, it's up there on YouTube for the people.
Yeah.
For the people to see.
And out on DVD as well, but the quality is just not very good because it's just so cheaply shot, as you mentioned earlier. It's
shot on like a Betamax.
It looks like a third or fourth generation.
Yeah. They probably edited it on videotape, and you know, you're probably getting third, fourth generation through editing. So it's don't look at it for the visual. Don't watch it on your biggest TV.
No, but look at it definitely as a staple in time, because that is exactly what it is. And what it is of two bands, Youth Brigade and Social Distortion, go on a 35-date tour through, was it New York, Canada?
Yeah, it was all over Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's which is, I mean, I don't even think you'd find bands today doing 35-date tours.
No?
Yeah, you know, not in America. I mean, I think usually bands will do by region, or they'll do fly-in shows. Like, I know Screeching Weasel tends to do shows where they fly in, do one show every 2 months or so.
Jesus, yeah. It's like Aerosmith.
You know, but basically fly in, maybe a driver takes their equipment or whatever, and they'll stay at a relative's place in the city, and then, you know, I think it's a more financially reasonable way to do a show like that. You don't know how well you're going to do if you're this band from the 80s that never really hit it big.
Yeah, but if you want to look at a true DIY tour, I mean, watch this, because it's got all the nuts and bolts, you know, the van breaking down and the bus breaking down, too many people. Yeah, so it seems to be, what was that guy, Sean Stern, the guitarist singer of Youth Brigade, seems to be a bit of a, I shouldn't say dictator because it's not a good term, but it seems to be his way or the highway. Sort of
thing. Somebody has to be a boss in those cases. I know with the Ramones, it was Johnny Ramone was the boss.
Well, yeah, you couldn't have Joey because he's just completely
flaky. But, you know, it is interesting. The Ramones did tours like that in the 70s, and Tommy Ramone was out, I think, after the first two tours or something. He was done. He couldn't handle the road. And who could blame him when you watch stuff like this? It's like, geez, that had to be a nightmare.
Yeah. But the Ramones really just stuck to the New York area, like CBGBs and, you know, playing places like that, and just in the smaller sort of, I guess, a tri-state area of New York, New Jersey.
Well, they did open for other big bands on tour. Like, they opened for bands like Van Halen and Black Sabbath and Journey, I think, or something.
See, the Ramones opening for Van Halen was wrong. It should have been the other way around. It should have been Van Halen opening for the Ramones.
Yeah. But, you know, it was like one band had major label support. The other band was on a big label but didn't get a whole lot of support or wisdom with the releasing and marketing.
It's funny how we've spoken numerous times about how people have this sort of retroactive or retrospective belief that the Ramones were huge. They just
weren't. No. Such an ultimate cult act. I mean, like, as in, they were hard to see. Like, you'd have to travel a great distance to see a Ramones gig.
Yeah. But, God, I wish I had seen them in 1980 when they came out here in July 1980.
Oh, geez. That would have been amazing because, yeah. I mean, they were said to be just great at that time.
That was with Marky as well, my favorite Ramones drummer. You know, Tommy Ramone, press F, but, I mean, Marky's always been my favorite.
Right. But, well, Marky stuck with it and came back.
Well, yeah, his alcoholism, yeah, got the best of him. So, yeah. They are. And there's a drummer as well. Like, we're not going to go on Ramones too much because we did it before with the End of the Century, but Richie Ramone, he was a damn fine drummer, I tell you.
Yeah, I would have been happy if Richie had stuck with it. But,
yeah. But anyway, so this documentary is all about, you know, it is a basically a handbook in DIY touring for that time. Yeah, as you said, you couldn't do it now. It would not be financially feasible.
Right.
It's also a handbook in... The had a slam dance as well.
I was reading up. They had that stuff in there as filler because they just did not have enough footage to get it over an hour.
Oh, okay, yeah, it makes sense.
So they filmed all that later to just fill time because they did not have it. Just simply wasn't enough footage.
Yeah, I thought, why am I watching three teenage kids dive off a diving board into a swimming pool? That stage dive. It means
the
nothing.
Password is padding.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it sticks. I mean, if you had to cut that these days, because who cares if it runs an hour or an hour and 18 minutes now? Cut that bit. It just means nothing. We don't need that guy showing us how, you know, what the moves that they're doing in the pit. Don't care.
Right.
Because you know, it's not a calculated move you're doing. It's just an expression of, you know, freedom of expression that you're doing. You know, you dance however you wanted those days. No one would give a shit, but... yeah, to have it broken down and described, it means nothing.
Well, that scene became more, I think, conformist, and that's probably what killed it in a way.
Yeah, I mean, there's also moments of contradiction here as well. It's like where these DIY punks and we're anti-capitalist man and anti this and anti that, but yeah, it just there's a few moments I thought, Hashtag
yeah, man, family values, man. That's not me. It's just like, doesn't work, man. It's
just like, and Ian MacKaye just sounds like he's brain dead in this. I mean, I like Minor Threat. I like Fugazi. You've seen him live as well, and they were great.
Mm-hmm.
The only band I've ever seen where they actually had, you know, people sitting on stage, like just cross-legged sitting on stage because there was no room left in the actual audience.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, even Kai's like, guys look a bit cramped. You want to just throw three or four people up here? They can just sit in the corner. Just sitting there cross-legged. It's like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, I've never listened to Minor Threat's original album that, of course, was everywhere, but I did watch like a concert video from like, I don't know, 83 or 82, whenever it was taped. And I thought it was pretty good. Fugazi stuff, I've listened to a couple of their albums, and they're okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't blow me away, and you know, I think a lot of people are put off by Ian MacKaye's personality with the preachiness and stuff, but it's like, you know, it's not really in the music. Yeah. Like, you know, when he's songwriting, he's not preaching to you or whatever. But the funny thing is, Pussy Galore, the band with John Spencer, and the guy who was later in Royal Trucks, Neil Haggerty, I think is his name.
Yeah.
They had a song making fun of Ian MacKaye and his Minor Threat scene called You Look Like a Jew. And it was like the most offensively mean song. And it's like, but it was like making fun of them for being so straight edge. And I don't know. If you hear that title, look it up, Google the lyrics. It's really, really funny. It's just because they were part of the Washington scene as well, but they weren't as PC.
And that was the in there is the actual ice cream factory, I think, ice cream store, I should say. That.
Yeah, Haagen-Dazs. I think it's where Henry Rollins was probably working.
He was, yeah.
Yeah.
Same time. And but what was funny was watching Ian MacKaye, who's this straight edge, you know, no beer, no drugs, no animal products, yet he's serving ice cream that's got mounds of animal fat in it. It's like, you fucking idiot. Do you even know that you got pig fat in these things that using as a solidifier for the ice cream? I mean,
These guys never figure that shit out.
No.
It's like all the morons that want the coal plant shut down because so we can all go on renewable energy. It's like, well, you know, to run electricity, you actually need, like, you need petroleum. You need a lot of stuff to keep those things running.
Yeah. I mean, I'm for some renewable energy. I get it. But you've got to have coal still.
Exactly.
You need
there's
coal.
There's no substitute.
No, there's not.
Solar energy has been around for like 100 years. It's never produced anything really, you know, that you could depend on it, put it that way.
Because if you're not getting any solar, you can't produce any energy. I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's great in the summer, I guess, but in other stages of the year, but not all year round.
Well, that's what they found out recently in some places is that, does it work so hot when there's no sun?
And South Australia over here is renowned for being a very, very renewable energy state.
Right.
And the guy, actually, who was the premier at the time there, named Jay Weatherall, I don't know if he still is, ironic name, they went into blackout, like all of South Australia, which is a big place, blacked out. And they just got ridiculed by all of the states saying, and it happened more than once. It happened, I think, two times. Close to each other, and they just, South Australia was in complete darkness. And poor bastards, they don't really have much over there to begin with. It's known as the City of Churches, Adelaide is, because everything's shut by 9 o'clock. If you try and buy a film that's rated R in South Australia, good luck, they don't sell it. So, and there's no joke. People from South Australia actually cross the line, like the state line, to go into Victoria or over to New South Wales to buy films that are rated R and then take them back to South Australia because you can't buy them.
Wow. I did not know that.
That is backwards.
So many interesting things about your country I'm just not aware of. Yeah. It's hilarious.
If you ever look at like catalogs, it'll have titles and have rated R in red, and down the bottom will have a little asterisk saying not available in South Australia. It's like, oh, you fucking idiots. No one.
I almost feel like we should do a spin-off podcast titled "Not Available in South Australia."
Yeah, this show should
just
not
love that. I love that term.
Yeah, we should get an algorithm happening where actually this show is just not available in South Australia as well.
Exactly, it's the new Epstein didn't kill himself.
Oh boy, I've seen enough of that.
Oh wow, but yeah, the. With Mackay, it's funny, like, they show that photo of him where he's, like, playing tennis or whatever when he was a kid in high school.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's interesting because of all the bands featured here, Minor Threat is the only one people still talk about, really. Like a legend. Like, Social Distortion, popular, but, you know, nobody's going to say one of the greats or anything. Like, Minor Threat is still, like, legendary.
Yeah, but Minor Threat got a bit of a bump as well in the mid-90s through Slayer. They covered two of their songs on their... that bloody punk album's... I've forgotten the name of the goddamn thing. It was actually...
I know which one you're talking about. Did a Stooges cover and some others. It was all covers or whatever.
Which made me think as well, because I was listening to Slayer's Repentless album from 2015, I think it is. And that's one band... vocally, Tom Araya borrowed from punk more than anybody from hardcore punk. His vocal style. Yeah, more so than Megadeth, Metallica, Anthrax, Exodus. Always, it was Slayer. Araya really. He seems like he was a huge punk fan. And as I said, it showed in his vocal delivery. So Minor Threat got a little bit of a bump through that, but as I said, Youth Brigade was the one that really popped out to me. I thought, wow, this band's something else. I really like this band a lot. But the problem is a lot of bands had that name, Youth, in this whole. Like, there was Reagan Youth, Youth Brigade.
Sonic Youth.
Sonic Youth, yeah, of course.
There was a producer named Youth, I think, who did like a Killing Joke record.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, there's a band I'm not really into, Killing Joke. I know Hunter's a huge fan of them.
I like the first album. I have it on vinyl, so I kind of you know, played it a lot and dug it. But yeah, the other stuff I don't really care much for.
No. But anyway, so they take themselves as well up to Canada. Is it Montreal? We get to see our friend Marcel.
Yes, yes, it's got to be Montreal.
Yeah, yeah, because the French speaking, yeah, a quarter of it, and
not the most politically correct punkers compared to what.
No, that girl was like, what she was saying that she'd beat up gay people and be used another derogatory term for it.
She used a derogatory term that gets you banned from Twitter.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's what it is. Yeah, that's the term. Yeah.
Yes.
Starts with a letter that comes after E in the...
Right. And, yeah. I mean, yeah, she was brutal. It's just like, I was like, wow, it was not... At least in Canada, it was not politically correct.
No.
I think politically correct punks came out of California and D.C., and it's like, but no, not Canada. They didn't care about that stuff, because they actually have... They're pretty oppressive on speech in Canada, I think.
What, even these days?
Yeah, you know, these days they just fired Don Cherry for just saying what you would hear Rush Limbaugh say every day on the radio in America.
Yeah, that's because they got Justin Castro as their
Trudeau, the blackface guy.
Yeah, Mr. Blackface. But
Trudeau Jolson there.
Justin Trudeau Jolson, but let's re-elect him anyway, yeah? Fucking...
They're awful. It's like Canada. Ridiculous. Yeah. And I love a lot of my Canadian friends, but geez.
Well, I'm sure they're actually really nice people, and you know, not everyone voted for Trudeau, and not everybody likes the guy, so you can't sort of, you know, I won't say tar them with that brush, because that's probably a bit of a conundrum term.
Right. Well, apparently, I think they go by a more like a popular vote model. I don't think they do like the American Electoral College.
Well,
so
thank God for that. Yeah, thank God for that. Otherwise, you'd have somebody else in power right there now in America. Not
Toronto and Vancouver pretty much, I think, swung the election for Trudeau, or supposedly. I mean, I'm sure Canadians laughing at us right now and saying,
or Soros.
Down. Whatever. Yeah. It's like, this is what I get from just skimming headlines. I don't really care about what goes on in Canada.
No. So anyway, they talk to this punker girl who... He's like a street kid. He's a streetly kid who just latches on the people and just takes from them, and just once they want her for sex, which I don't believe her for a second, because
yeah, I think she was. There was a lot of fiction,
bit of grandstanding there, and,
bit of work, but yeah, I think she'd be. I think that's what they call gutter punks.
Yeah, gutter mouth as well.
Right. Oh God.
Yeah, but then she's talking about a guy who's there, which. I remember him. He certainly stuck out from the first time I've ever seen him on this documentary called Marcel.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's got a tire mark over his face or something.
Yeah.
Or something from a Hammer horror film, you know, like some servant who is in a dungeon, you know, with his master. And he even sounds like him, because...
He talks like this, and
yeah,
I want to die.
There was a pose there, too. I mean, the tire mark on the face was like, come on.
Yeah. It looks like, yeah, it was, wow. I don't remember him being as bad as what he was, but
I think the crew got worked. I think the film crew here totally got worked.
You think, you think he was bumming
There was a carny aspect to that I think they... It was a bit carny. I think the Quebecers were having some fun with him.
I think they just shoved him in there because, like, this guy's interesting. Someone's going to walk away. Some art critic, some film critic's going to say, the man with the speech impediment was the most the one who made the most sense out of anybody. It's like, no. He says he wants to die because... And this is going to sound bad, John. He sounded very Frankenstein. It's like, I don't like people because people are scared of me. He's like, I'm going to take that
right,
car off.
Fire right. Bad.
Yeah. Friend good. punk good. People bad.
Me like Youth Brigade.
Nah, down with Frampton. Youth Brigade, yes.
I thought a lot of that was there's an aspect of work there.
Yeah, now that you mention it, it does seem a lot of padding in this scene. I would not be surprised if really they just got 45 minutes out of this thing and said, shit, we need another half hour somewhere.
It's totally what they did. I think it really shows. It definitely showed when I watched it this time.
Yeah. And when we had that closet guy from Social Distortion, Lyles, I think his name was.
Something. One of the guys who died later.
Yeah, he's like, dead now. Yeah.
Half the cast is like dead.
Half of Social Distortion's dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's the one who had the blonde hair. Then he dyed it blue, I think. And he's just like, yeah, he was just the closet. He was just like, dude, come out of the closet. You're in the punk scene. No one's gonna care. But
yeah, they were. There was obviously, I think, the closet homosexual thing was it was not addressed there, but it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, but you ever been to a hardcore punk show?
I was trying to think if I've ever been to what would be called a hardcore punk show. I don't think I ever was. I mean, I certainly don't count NoFX, who I can't stand these.
No
days.
Way. I've seen them. They're awful. Just god awful band. They're more fast pop. I mean, there's a guy who I spoke to once back in the mid 90s. He goes, it's not punk, it's just fast pop music. I just go, yeah, got a good point.
It is. Totally. He's right.
Yeah. And that was the thing as well with that god awful scene. You had NoFX and you had Snuff was another one.
Mm-hmm. A lot of bands that were on Epitaph.
Oh yeah, and Fat Records, one or the other. You know.
It was either Fat Records or but NoFX was on Epitaph before they formed the Fat Records as an actual distribution thing or something. And I went to see bands like Rancid, but I don't think I ever went to an actual hardcore band. I think I thought about seeing Agnostic Front, but then I was like, eh.
I saw Agnostic Front actually back in 96. It was 96. I think it was 97, one or the other. Because there was actually a hardcore band called H2O that came out. They had a few albums. So we were actually really good.
And I remember them.
Remember them, yeah. Because I think the singer, I think his name was Toby, I think it was Krishna.
Okay.
I'm sure he's Hare Krishna, yeah. And saw H2O and Agnostic Front were opening for him, or Agnostic Front may have been Agnostic Front were the main band, H2O were the openers. That's what it was. And that was another band who I actually been listening to lately as well, was H2O, to get me interested in covering this thing. But yeah, I think I've been to a few. I saw Shelter live. They were great. Who else did I see? Actually, yeah, now that I think about it, I went and saw a hardcore show, just a local band in 88 with a guy named Monkey. That was his nickname, Monkey. I can't remember his real name. And real good guy, and was friends with him at school. He's like, oh, Stu, you got to come and see these bands. I don't know who the hell they were. I think Gash was one of them. Gash was interesting. There was two females on bass and guitar, and a male drummer called Smear. Gash stood for Girls Against Sexual Harassment. Depression was another band I saw. They were on that bill. Mm-hmm. There was a few. It was actually one I went to. Yeah, I've been to a few hardcore shows, actually, where Gash was playing, where Smear got into a fight with someone in the hallway. Not me, but someone else. And that's right. There was this guy who was drunk off his skull, like just fucked. And outside the gig, it was like, I'm going on to go over the road and get a mohawk. He had a full set of head. He had a full head of hair at the time. Went and got a mohawk. Came back after like 45 minutes. Came back with his fucking new mohawk. Went inside the gig. Got up on stage in between one of the songs. I think it might have been Depression was playing. Yelled something into the mic, and then stage dived off, the seas just parted like fucking Moses, and his head just went smack straight on the floor. And he's giving himself a fucking almighty of a shiner on his head. That was on a Friday. The following day, on the Saturday, I went to a local market. He's this guy with his fucking mohawk sporting a shiner selling t-shirts at the store. I'm like, oh my God, that was you. Shit, a brick. Yeah, I was with my mate, John, actually, another guy I knew called John at the time. He goes, there's that guy from last night. I'm like, oh, fuck. Sitting there drinking as well, because you can drink in the stalls. I didn't care. You're just drinking.
Well, you know what happened to Iggy Pop, too. He stage dived in Huntsville, Alabama in like 1996 or 97, and the seas parted, and he fell and dislocated his shoulder.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that does. I would not.
Because, you know, the Huntsville Hicks had never really done stage diving stuff.
What's this guy doing? He's going to jump off the stage there. Ah, oh, damn. Get out of the way.
That was the Roar Tour, which I think was sponsored by a chewing tobacco company like Skoll.
No, Iggy wouldn't give a shit. He's like, yeah, just put me on tour. I don't care.
Because I saw him on that tour. He actually played in Jackson, Mississippi, and it was really good set from him. But I couldn't stand Bloodhound Gang and Sponge. I think was the other group there. Or you know, one of those '90s bands. I can't remember any of them.
Bloodhound Gang was interesting. I did have that first album, One Fierce Beer Coaster, and I really do enjoy it. It's it's a fun album, but I never did see them live. But never knew what happened. I knew they had that other big hit afterwards with that. Oh, I can't remember the name of the song. It's about that. Let's do it like we do on the Discovery Channel. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but don't know whatever happened to that band. But I mean, get back to this documentary. There's not a real great deal we can really say. It is very, very padded out. It's certainly a product of its time.
Yeah.
Well worth a watch. I will say that much.
No, watch it once to at least see how hypocritical a lot of these bands were.
Yeah, I mean,
what they're spouting is stuff. If you picked up a punk zine in the 80s, you read that crap all the time. They all sound like hippies.
How many of these bands, like John, honestly, really believed in the anti-capitalist movement?
I don't even know. I don't even think they were smart enough to even know what capitalism was.
God, the Dead Kennedys were the biggest capitalists out there of the fucking punk movement. They were the ones, you know, Jell-O's like, corporations suck. And it's like, well.
Yeah. Well, Jell-O got sued by the other Dead Kennedys because he was withholding royalties.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and he lost. That's why they tore around with the guy from Courtship of Eddie's Father as their singer, whoever sings for him now.
Oh, that kid, really?
Yeah. He grew up to be Brandon Cruz, I think was his name.
That's it.
He later sang for a LA punk band called Dr. No.
Yeah.
Right. And then he, when the Dead Kennedys reunited, of course, they weren't going to play with Jell-O. So they had the names. I think for a while they had to call themselves the DKs. Now they can call themselves the Dead Kennedys. But for a while they had Brandon Cruz as their singer.
That makes sense. I remember seeing him on
but
Dr. No.
I think they were mad at Jell-O because not only was Jell-O hiding royalties from him or whatever, but he also like turned down a Nike wanted to use Holiday in Cambodia in a commercial, and I think which would have paid all those guys some money. None of the other guys wanted to, you know, ever really made it big outside of the Dead Kennedys, and you know, they were like, well, hey, we'd like to make some money
here. Are they gonna do with a goddamn song for a Nike commercial?
And Nike was all about compromising these punk bands, and Jell-O refused to do it, I think, and that was a bone of contention, but I think it was found out that he was hiding royalties from them.
What were they going to redo the song? These shoes are made in Cambodia?
Yeah, and I think they also wanted to... That's what it would have been. Yeah. But I think they also wanted to issue, like, remastered Dead Kennedy CDs and stuff and such, and, you know, they were able to do that after they successfully took Jell-O to court. So, you know, when I was hanging out with Jell-O, he was mentioning that he basically taught those guys the different songs or Hawkwind riffs to rip off or whatever. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of bitterness there.
There's actually a documentary on YouTube about the making of the first album, Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables.
Oh, really? Hell, yes. I'll watch that.
But there's no Jell-O in there. He's not in there at all. It's just basically Klaus Fluoride and East Bay Ray.
Right. You know,
talking. And yeah, I mean, good album. Probably the best, you know, Dead Kennedys album, I would say.
That is the best album.
You know, some of the other ones after that, I was not too keen. I did like Bedtime for Democracy, because that's more of a hardcore album. What was the other one? Plastic Surgery Disasters? Was that an EP?
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, Plastic Surgery Disaster. It's a quick, fast album, but it's fun.
Yeah.
You know.
And Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death. But I think that's a compilation, isn't it?
It's like a compilation of B-sides or something. But that has MTV Get Off the Air.
Yeah.
I think that has it. I think that's on there.
It might do, yeah. But yeah. Yeah, so there's that documentary on the Fresh Fruit making of. But yeah, unfortunately no Jello Biafra.
I'll have to watch that. That actually would be pretty interesting. I like that album.
I mean, he doesn't need to be in the same room. He's just him speaking from the other side of the country. Who cares? At least get his thoughts on making the thing. But maybe we're not even...
He probably refused to participate. His whole thing is running alternative tentacles and doing his spoken word and his unlistenable new music.
Yeah, doing collaborations with Al Jorgensen, with Lard.
Right. I mean, I don't know how those guys think they're doing anything valuable. It's like, yeah, Donald Trump victory, what are you going to say? Because you didn't say anything about Obama, so it's like you just don't. Who is just as president pork barrel as any of them?
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah, they went silent for 8 years during that period.
Yeah, it's like we kind of recognize that stuff. Like when 8 years later in the American media, you'll notice, oh, the homeless are a problem again. You know, oh, because a Republican is in the White House. So suddenly you admit there's a homeless problem.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. It's eyes shut, mouth shut when it's the other way around.
Right. I mean, you know, I think that's a problem with a lot of the punk music is when it started getting into where it pushed left-wing politics, that was just it. It wasn't going to make it, you know. And the American working class and punk was supposed to be this working class music. They didn't really pick up on that stuff. They don't like communism. They don't like any of that stupid shit. So they got into AC/DC and they got into Dokken or whatever the hell, you know.
Dokken. Oh, boy. But, anything else you want to add to this thing? We're just going to touch upon it. We'll pop the YouTube link in the show notes there.
Yeah, Keith Morris, first singer of Black Flag and later the Circle Jerks, does some ranting stuff, and that's done for padding too. And it's just the usual Keith Morris rant. And it's like, and you keep in mind that guy is like now wears dreadlocks and is always in danger, I think, of being homeless or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but I would say actually, The Decline of the Western Civilization Part 1 is a much better documentary than this one.
Yeah, I think that's totally the one to watch. Definitely watch that first.
Even though the bands in Decline, most of them I really weren't that keen on. Fear was one I really liked a lot. The Germans,
I think Fear Alive, I guess that might count as hardcore.
Yeah, they would, yeah.
And I saw Circle Jerks, but I don't think they sound all that hardcore outside of the Group Sex album.
Yeah. There was always talk of this band called Flipper, which Roland's...
I've listened to them. I don't quite get it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
quite understand it. It's almost like, to me, a band like Flipper sounds like an American band trying to imitate krautrock.
What, like Kraftwerk?
Yeah, or no, like Can or Noi or one of those type of groups.
Okay.
That kind of like hard to figure out type of music or something, or just kind of weird. Like it sounds so off-putting that it's interesting to listen to. You know, they're trying to be more interesting than actually heavy rocking.
Yeah. I don't know. But haven't heard much of Flipper. Actually, haven't heard very, very little. So I'll give it a try and see what I think. But yeah, like I said, with Decline, Fear was the one that I really liked the most. Germs. But here, Youth Brigade was one that really... That's a band I'm going to go delve into their catalogue and see what if there's any little treasures in there besides that first album, that Sound and Fury, which is a absolute fucking must buy, a must have in my book.
Yeah.
Blown away by it. But I know, actually, listener of the show, Anson Matthews. Anson, if you've got any thoughts on this, I know you're a big punk fan of this period, so if you got any thoughts that you want to chime in on this, pop it in the group or even record an MP3 and pop it up to... get it to myself and I'll pop it on the next show if you want to pop your thoughts in there. And anyway, we want to rate this thing. John, we'll just keep this one, like the documentary, we'll keep it short, sharp, and to the point, I guess.
I don't know if I have anything else to say. I say if you're a Social Distortion fan, you're going to want to see the young Mike Ness, you know, has basically seeing his band fall apart on tour. And it's, you know, I was thinking about when I was watching this, it's like, this is how difficult it was back then when there was no internet. and you could not easily connect with other people of a, of the same interest. Like if you were into something like hardcore, that was a really tough scene to hook up with.
You could not have a Twitter or an Instagram account saying, hey, these are the dates we're going to be playing, or a website and saying, find us here. It's like it was literally word of mouth.
Yeah, and it was crazy. It was like people don't know how difficult that was back then. It's just imagine that. Salute these guys for having the balls to go through a crazy tour like that with nothing really defined.
Do you see many flyers around your town?
No.
Oh, well, you do here in Melbourne. Heaps.
Really?
Still an art form, yeah.
But, you know, I don't go to the record store anymore, and I'm sure there are flyers at the record store. I just don't go.
No, I'm talking about plastered over, like, over buildings and stuff like that. Do you ever see?
No, I don't go into town that much.
No?
So, with my work, I can work out of, my house. I haven't been in my office in over a year.
Jesus!
I just work from home, so I'd never go into town and see, like, I didn't see flyers anyway, because I don't think punk or that type of indie music is anything now. I don't think anybody cares about live music. Even though Denver has all these bars and all these places that these bands can play, it's like you just see it in the free alternative newspaper every week, and you check the listings out or check online, and that's it. This, you don't see like a flyer culture, like, you know, a wall with flyers all over the place. I know what you're talking about, because like when I lived in Boston in the mid-90s, you would always see flyers everywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have seen them there for sure.
Yeah.
But, you definitely do see them in Melbourne. You see, I think there was one for DJ Paul Nice when he was touring here a couple of years ago.
There probably was. Should have snatched it, scanned it.
Oh, no, it was one of those huge ones that they roll onto.
Oh, okay.
They do it under bridges, and they do it, you know, in designated, like, you know, the city of Melbourne itself, the actual city part, is not plastered in flyers, but there are particular areas you will definitely see them. Right. So, yeah. But, anyway, let's rate this thing. What are you going to give another State of Mind?
I give it a 5.
A 5? Okay. No, only
well, I mean, it's not something that I'm going to own. You know, it's just something you can watch on YouTube, and it's like, it's interesting. It's not great, but it's interesting.
I'll give it a 6.
Yeah.
I'll give it a 6. Yeah.
It's fair. I wouldn't yell at you for giving it that. That's a fair rating.
Because it is a blueprint of how a DIY tour was and what not to do these days. Among other things. Also seeing early footage of Social Distortion, Youth Brigade. And they do have a documentary up on YouTube as well. You can watch a full-length one about themselves and the birth of their BYO records. So if you like Youth Brigade, I think there's even a documentary about Mike Ness and Social Distortion. So there's no sort of shortage of things you can catch up on about these particular bands and what they've done since Another State of Mind.
Right.
So I will give it a 6 and say, yeah, definitely watch it. Watch as a back-to-back with Decline of Western Civilization Part 1.
Yes. Yes. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Is there any more punk?
Watch it right after that.
Yeah, watch one. Yeah, watch Decline first, then watch Another State of Mind after. Am I thinking there's another punk documentary, or am I losing my mind?
Of that era? I can't really think of one.
I don't think there is. Nothing really
comes to mind of that 80s scene. That's kind of when it was dying. You know, people forget, like, when the Ramones, like, okay, the early 90s when Nirvana and bands like that might be name-dropping the Ramones, and they had sort of a mild comeback, but not really much. They were already like an oldies act.
Yeah.
Like punk was dead. It's like Ben Weasel had even said, he goes, when Screecher Weasel was touring, he says punk was not a thing. It was like they might have seemed quaint at the time or whatever. And when I was in high school, punk music was seen as just music for skaters.
Well, it became that in the 90s, didn't it? It just became...
Yeah.
Yeah, it just... God, I hate that fucking period. I mean, there's some good bands, but really the 90s were just 10 years of shit, if you ask me.
Yeah, it doesn't do much for me. And, of course, the bands I liked were the bands that were much bigger 20 years later. So, you know, the John Spencer Blues Explosion. More popular now in movies I don't want to watch because they're on the soundtrack, but, you know, like Baby Driver.
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, before we go, I need to give a big thanks out to a couple of people out there, a couple of listeners, a couple of friends, I should say. Mr. Richard Kuhn, thank you, sir, for sending me the very nice package all the way from the US, which featured the original, as brand new, pristine lobby cards from Wacko, which I didn't even know existed.
Oh, my.
Laugh all you want, Mr. Grace, but I'm telling you what, those things, they're sealed away, and when I get my frames, which I'm going to get measured up, they're going to be stuck into the theater room and framed up there, as they were back in the day.
Right.
Yeah. And also, he did send me, and I'm sure you're going to like this, John, because you're a big fan of this guy, he sent me the 6-disc Best of Midnight Blue collection.
Al Goldstein.
Al Goldstein. I had heard of this show. Just I think Mr. Nesbitt may have mentioned it to me, or I know Richard did.
Yeah.
Had no idea it was a public access cable show. Ran for nearly 30 years. That's some fucking mean feat to run.
Yeah.
And I got to say, man, 12 hours long, I watched every single disc up in the theater room on the big screen. I thought, what a fucking set. Outstanding set. And have become a fan of Mr. Al Goldstein, if I may say so.
That was the show that Howard Stern's Channel 9 show is kind of a ripoff of.
That doesn't surprise me now that you mention it.
That was kind of mentioned because there's a guy who I think hosted some episodes of Midnight Blue, Alex Bennett.
Yes.
And Alex Bennett was a huge inspiration to Howard Stern. And in fact, they said if you found like early air checks of Alex Bennett from like the 70s, you would almost think it was Stern you were listening to. And that was kind of the interesting thing there.
I wish I did know that before I watched it, because then I could have drawn parallels between the two, but I didn't. But he does give Howard Stern a massive serve on this thing. They apparently were fighting with each other for quite a while. And
oh, yeah. I can't even remember any of that stuff, but I recall there were all these silly feuds. Like, what does it mean now? Stern's trying to get on, you know, housewife shows and stuff.
Oh, boy. Yeah. But that Best of Midnight Blue set, outstanding. And if you do end up picking it up, please watch it with the enhanced trivia track, because it's informative and funny as well. It's a goddamn great set. Unfortunately, it does not feature Volume 5 in it, which is a separate standalone release, which I have got in my thing to have all 7 volumes. But yeah. Thanks, Richard. That is an outstanding set. And thank you, Anthony Nesbitt. He was also sent me some stuff. God damn, it should be fucking here today. It's been taking forever to get in. He has sent me the I. Goldstein book, the autobiography of Al Goldstein, which you can't find anywhere.
Is that the one that came out in the 00s?
Yes, 07.
I read that because I found it at the library and read it.
Oh, really? I tried finding it here, and it was, forget it. You can't get it anywhere. And it's long out of print, so I emailed Anthony, and I just said, Hey, Nez, if you find this book in your local bookstore, can you let me know and get it to me and I'll fix you up? He goes, oh, you just have mine. It's in excellent condition. I'm like, shit.
Yeah, it's not something you'd read repeatedly. That's the one where he talks about his relationship with Linnea Quigley.
Oh, really? Does he?
Yeah, the actress. He was dating her.
He was dating? Wow, shit. That's interesting.
Well, they were both old. They were both. You know, it's the senior citizen Al Goldstein dating the middle-aged or possibly older Linnea Quigley.
Yeah. But boy, that guy was, he was like the porn version of Oprah. He was big and he was thin and he was huge and he was thin. And I'm talking about weight-wise.
Yeah, and then he died broke.
Died broke in a nursing home or something, mm-hmm. Yeah. But,
yeah, just kind of, Guccione, same thing.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah,
didn't know
Bob Guccione died broke, I believe.
That's
or
the guy
broken who, ill, or it was weird. It was like they were auctioning off Bob Guccione's possessions, art collection, which was probably incredibly valuable.
Yeah, I think Goldstein died in 2012 or 13, and I'm glad he didn't live to see Donald Trump become president, because he absolutely hated this guy even back in the late 80s. He was. You know, F you, Trump. It had nothing to do with the politics side. It was the fact of I don't know nothing about New York, but apparently Trump felt, you know, acted like he owned New York, and New Yorkers did not like that. So, yeah, lucky he. I wish he kind of lived. Did see Trump become president, because we could have got some almighty rants out of Goldstein. But
then he would have had a heart attack.
No, probably would. Yeah, Trump would have really killed him off.
Would have been the end of it. It's funny, all those guys are dead except for Larry Flint. He's the one you thought would go first.
Yeah, there's actually an interview with Larry Flint in this pre-wheelchair. So, yeah. Boy, what an interesting show. And just seeing the old adverts like Plato's Retreat and all the old swingers ads. It's just,
well, it's all pre-AIDS New York, so it's like this weird, sleazy time. And that's gone. That's not coming back.
I remember seeing a documentary about Plato's Retreat as well on Netflix a number of years back about the guy who... him and his wife created it.
I think I started watching that, or for whatever reason I lost interest. But I do remember Plato's Retreat getting portrayed in Summer of Sam, Spike Lee's only good movie.
Oh, did it? I have not seen that one.
Yeah, that's actually really good. And it's funny, if you want it on Blu-ray, you got to buy a foreign Blu-ray. You can't. It's not on American Blu-ray.
Well, buying it from America would be foreign to me, so...
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's like a British or Spanish Blu-ray or something. But that's a good movie. Like, I really dug it.
Okay. We'll have to check it out. But I need to find that Plato's Retreat documentary. I can't remember the name of it.
I do remember what you were talking about. I remember watching a little bit of it.
Yeah, that guy apparently died, like, broke as well. Because when you mentioned about Guccione as well, like, that guy was a cab driver in the end before his death. So,
jeez, yeah, it's funny. And well, look at how irrelevant Playboy is. Like, just as Hefner was dying, Playboy is completely irrelevant. It's like, I think we're looking for a buyer or something, and now they publish like four times a year
because no one needs it. You got the net.
Yeah,
you want to see?
Well, it also, that was a magazine that got by on its writing, because there really wasn't that much, you know, nude pictorials or whatever in that magazine anyway, but the writing was crap by the 90s. So once they were reviewing video games, it's like, okay, then that whole Playboy lifestyle thing is dead.
Video games? Oh, God.
Yeah, they were reviewing video games in the 90s. I said, okay, Playboy's done.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
You know, that was the place where you'd get the new Norman Mailer short story or whatever, and nope. It's like, now they're reviewing Resident Evil, okay.
Oh, God. I did watch...
culture, they were infantiled before everybody else, you know?
I did watch a mini-documentary about Hugh Hefner. Mm-hmm. And that guy was difficult to deal with. He was very fastidious in the fact that his food had to be brought out exactly at this time, and it had to be this amount, and it had to be this, and it had to be placed on the tray like this. And the guy basically never got out of bed. He was just in bed all the time.
Right.
You know, just pressing everything with a buzzer and... whatever.
There was some cool stuff about him. Like, you know, he's the reason the Basil Rathbone Sherlock Holmes movies got remastered. Like, he paid the bill to get UCLA prints. Okay. Yeah, he financed that. He's given credit for it, I think, on the DVDs, like the Hugh M. Hefner Foundation or something. Sure. And he was working with, of all companies, Serial Squadron, this independent DVD company that puts out serials, you know, old serials, restores them, tries to. He gave them some funds, I believe, to finance some remasterings. He's a big fan of serials, and he liked old Pulp Fiction, like The Spider in the Shadow.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's he's done some good with his money, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, he did some good before he left his magazine to die with his insane son, who put like a transgendered playmate in the magazine.
Oh, God. And supposedly, allegedly having playmates, perform bodily function on his head. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, but, you know, the whole, maybe we'll have to do one of those documentaries to talk about the whole weird era of men's magazines.
I'd like to do the one about the Plato's Retreat, actually. I think that'd be an interesting conversation.
You know, find where it is. I'll try to find it myself. Maybe we'll cover that on a future show.
Oh, well. Anyway, that's it for me. I've got the day off work, so I'm going to kick back and enjoy it. But I've got to work tomorrow morning, so early night. But, hey, Sunday, I'm off to see Dr. Sleep with with the boy, one of my boys. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. That's the sequel to The Shining, for those of you who don't know. Yeah. Heard mixed, but I have heard it's a long movie. It's 2.5 hours, but that's cool. I can dig that.
All movies are 2.5 hours now.
You seen Joker yet?
No, haven't seen it.
Piss off. I don't want to talk to you anymore.
I haven't gotten around to it. It's just like I'm waiting for it to hit second run. That way, if I don't like it, I could leave in an hour and just go to the gym or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's on home video in the first week of January. So it's
really?
Yeah. It's January 8th. It's being released, so it's not that far away, really. It's,
I think what's so funny is it's very successful, and it's tremendously successful. I think it's the most profitable movie from a comic book franchise ever, because it only costs like $55 million to make. But this is the funny thing to me, is that I bet still next year you're going to hear DC movies are in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Because every time they have a huge hit, then you keep hearing, oh, they're in trouble. But it's like, wait a minute, Aquaman was a monster at the box office. Joker is doing incredibly well. Where are they coming up with these ideas?
Because they're putting all these other little, funding all these other little films, you know, out there that no one's really seeing and losing money hand over fist on them. So, DC, don't try and keep up with Marvel and the amount of shit they put out. There's no point. It's pointless.
Well, they're taking the right approach, I think, is they're letting directors make the type of movies that the director wants to make, and they're not trying to do a uniform production style like Marvel does. I can't tell one Marvel movie from the other.
I'm actually trying to think what the hell name that Star Wars 8 movie was or is. I know there's a Force Awakens. The one after that, I have no idea.
Last Jedi.
Last Jedi. Is there a part
it's
9
on,
out
it's
yet?
On Netflix. I've never watched it. So.
Wasn't there Solo? Wasn't there something
Solo? I saw Solo in a theater because my wife and I were looking for a movie to see second run.
Boy.
And it's like, okay, we'll go see Solo. Why not? You know, and it was okay. I didn't hate it or anything, but it wasn't anything exceptional. Had I paid $12-15 to see it, I'd have been pissed.
Wasn't there another one that was a spin-off?
Rogue One.
And that's what I'm getting at. It's just Star Wars, just die. Just crawl away and die like please, enough. Do your part 9 and sod off. Not interested. No more.
Yeah, I think this will be it for a while.
Yeah. All right, that's us done for this episode. Hopefully we'll have Hunter back for the next one. Now, just one last thing. This is where here's the fine print. I've already put a post in the group, and I'm not going to name any names. I'm not singling anybody out. But if you're in the Facebook group, discuss films, put out humor, but within reason, you know, with the humor, nothing disgusting. But if you start attacking other people or start calling names, etc., etc., understand I'm going to throw you the fuck out. Because I'm sick of it. I've sat back. I haven't been very active in the group for quite a while. I've just been busy doing other things. I've got work and life, etc. But I'm absolutely sick of it now. So discuss. Don't become offensive or abrasive, because I've already warned you in the group with a post. I'm doing it audibly now on the episode here. So don't say you haven't been told one way or the other. This is not directed at one particular person or two other it is a blanket statement. Act that way, and I will fucking will throw you out. No ifs or buts. And on that note, I'm going to say adios.
Yeah, we'll just say, look, discussion group, it's not Dodge City. Later.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination.
Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.